Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.
You are Locked On Warriors, your daily Golden State Warriors podcast. I am Danny LaRue, your host, and so happy to bring you your team every day. After the game, I was talking with Anthony Slater, who writes for the San Jose Mercury News, about doing the logistics of doing a podcast for today, and he does Warriors All 82, which is another daily Warriors podcast. And so as we were kind of sitting there talking through ideas, complaining a little bit because we didn't think there was that much to talk about with this game, we decided to do it together. So we did the first ever Warriors All 82 Locked On Warriors crossover. Actually found a lot to talk about. We talked for about 35 minutes about various things, this game, Durant, everything else. I love talking with Anthony. It's a fun conversation about a lot of different things. And so I hope you really do enjoy it. And since we ended up being substantive and going so long, this will be the episode for Monday as well. And then, of course, we'll have a new episode on Tuesday talking about Warriors-Pacers and getting into a very big week of games with the 4-5 road trip, which Anthony and I discussed just a little bit as well. So I hope you enjoy it.
Hello and welcome back to another edition of the Warriors All 82 podcast special edition, crossover edition. Anyone that is listening to the podcast after tonight's game, kind of a sleepy 138-109 win over the Suns, must love the Warriors. And if they love the Warriors, hopefully they're listening to both my podcast, The Warriors All 82, and Danny LaRue, who's on the line with me, who does his own Locked On Warriors podcast. And we're fusing them together after this one.
I feel like it's appropriate considering this game. And, you know, it was one of those, just in an 82-game season, you always have some that kind of get, let's call it, lost in the shuffle. And it feels like this is one of those games.
Yeah, and the Warriors are really good at winning those games. That, you know, the stat that was kind of out there tonight, you know, batted around because they obviously lost the last game, was that this is now 106 straight regular season games that they haven't lost two in a row. And we're talking about this on the same week that I think the Clippers lost three in a row, the Cavs lost three in a row. This team does not lose two games in a row.
They really don't. And there was this moment kind of, so it was at the end of the second quarter. I actually asked Coach Kerr about this after the game, where I think the Suns went on a 17-3 run, and it felt like it was going to be one of those Warriors games where, you know, they were going to win, but it was going to be closer than it had any reason to be. And then they had that third quarter where they scored 42 points, 42-27, and pretty much ended it, even though Durant and Klay still played most of the fourth quarter anyway.
Yeah. Weird moment in the second quarter. I mean, we'll get to all the good for the Warriors, and, you know, on any night you score 138 points, there's a lot of good. But that second quarter run, which, you know, you can expect in games like this, just lulls at times. But I thought the weird part of that lull where the lead, I think, went to from 21 to 7, like pretty quickly, Draymond Green, who has been obviously so good defensively all season, had 13 assists tonight, was great tonight. I think he was just mad that Klay Thompson like took a fadeaway when he was open at the top of the key and then maybe shot the next time down. But he just kind of started shaking his head and not trying for about 3 minutes. And as he was walking off the court, I mean, Draymond gave up like two straight offensive rebounds at the end of the first half. It was kind of a really weird sequence. And then, I mean, first of all, did you see that?
I didn't see it offhand, but somebody pointed it out to me. I think probably Nate pointed it out to me. And then it was something that I saw after kind of like the first thing.
Yeah. And I mean, you saw how kind of, he wasn't getting back on defense. He was kind of jogging around almost as if he was saying, like, you know, he was kind of, I guess, protesting like the last 3 minutes of the half because you know, he didn't get that pass. And then as he's walking off the floor, which I thought this is a good moment for the Warriors, he's walking off the floor angrily as the buzzer's going off. They've just kind of had a big slice into their lead. David West comes out, stops Draymond Green, lets the entire team walk into the locker room, and together walks Draymond into the locker room. Kind of, I don't know exactly what he was saying, obviously. He was pretty far away from me, but just watching David West, that was kind of one of the moments why they got a guy like David West.
Yeah, to quote Paul Pierce, that's why they brought him here.
Yeah.
You know, like, right, really, that's David West is, as much as it's been frustrating at moments, considering he has played well, I think he's played well enough to deserve more minutes. But the main reason they brought him in beyond being a solid pro was exactly that part of it, that he is somebody who has the credibility to tell anyone on this team, whether it's Steph or Clay or Draymond, hey, bottle it up, do whatever you need to do. We're going after something bigger.
Yeah. Extreme efficiency tonight. Steph Curry, 31 points on 15 shots. Kevin Durant, 20 points on 7 shots. When you say these numbers, would you say 20 points on 7 shots for Durant? Or that? I mean, he had 9 free throws, so it's not like he just had 7 possessions and he hit, you know, 6 threes or something. Do you say 20 points on... I mean, you guys talk shooting possessions sometimes, right?
Yeah, Nate and I usually use shooting possessions just because it gets a little bit closer. Because, yeah, because 20 points on 7 shots is almost impossible. Like, it is, yeah, I guess if you made 6 threes and 6 threes and 2, you could do it. But, yeah, so let's say with this, it was 9, so I would say this was 20 points on 11 shooting possessions. But it's ridiculous no matter how you slice it. I mean, that's Durant is, as you know, of course, is a very different type of player. And one thing that struck me about this game, and it's happened a couple times this year, but this was probably the most notable example of it, is that while he did score 20 points on however many, you know, 11 shooting possessions, the moments that I'll remember from his game tonight were on the defensive end.
Yeah. I mean, it's been like that all season. That's the one thing I think this season, you know, obviously, yeah, I've covered Durant now. This is my fourth season. This is him from an offensive efficiency standpoint. I've seen games like this with 20 on 7 or, you know, maybe not 7 shots, more like 30 on, you know, 13 or something like that. But, I mean, none of what he's doing offensively surprises me. I know his field goal percentage is up to 58, which is, you know, I think 6 more than his career high before. But putting him on this team, this is what I expected. What I didn't expect is just how good he's been defensively. I wrote a little bit about it the other day, but I mean, post defense on Towns the other night, 6 blocks in that game, career high in blocks, steals. He seems more engaged defensively than I've ever seen him, and maybe that is because the burden on offense is just not what it was in Oklahoma City.
Yeah, I think that's a part of it, and also I think he's energized by the Warriors having these moments of defensive intensity. You know, it's kind of like the Warriors this year have waxed and waned in terms of intensity on that end, and I think that's actually worked relatively well for Durant. He's also been a good bellwether. Like, Draymond's basically at 100 the whole time, so he's not a bellwether for anything because he's Draymond. But Durant can do that. He has these moments, and what I think back a lot to being in Oklahoma City for games 3 and 4 of the Western Conference Finals, which I will I'll probably remember that for the rest of my life. And one of the big reasons is because that was when Kevin Durant, and you could say the Spurs series too, but when I saw what Durant could be defensively, and it's still more flashes than anything else, like that block against Eric Bledsoe. But when I watch that, I think, oh yeah, this team is going to be so much better defensively when it gets down to it in May and June, when it's these guys trying as hard as they can.
Yeah, there was a moment, I think it was the Rockets game the other night. I think it might have been late in the first half where he lets, maybe it was Montrezl Harrell or somebody kind of just slip right by him for an easy putback where he wasn't even paying attention. That he has those concentration lapses defensively. He gets backdoor cut a lot. Except it was a lot more in Oklahoma City. And that's just kind of what I'm talking here defensively is that I don't see those plays as much. It did happen once the other night, but he feels more locked into me on that end. I think maybe, you know, maybe if he stayed in Oklahoma City, it'd be like that too, because I think he kind of got pumped about the conversation about his defense during the playoffs last year, where, you know, you're mentioning it right now, how, you know, it kind of really opened your eyes to what he could be defensively. Might have opened his eyes a little bit. And when everyone was talking about how good he was on that end, I just think he just takes a little bit more pride in it because, you know, he now knows people will compliment it a lot more, I think.
And he is, and I mean this in a overall positive way, he is aware of what is said about him in that kind of a way. And so it is, and I mean, I can understand, I've never been in that kind of a world where people get paid money to talk about how I do my job, but I can imagine that if I were, I would do the same thing. And so, yeah, the praise he got for that, but not only that, they also were incredibly good. Like, the greatest, you know, while it didn't reach the heights of 2012, at the same point, the Thunder played their best basketball for those couple weeks in May when they beat the Spurs and almost beat the Warriors. And Durant's defense was a big part of that.
Yeah. As to, like, your first point there, You would, I would, everyone would. Just, I just want the anyone listening to imagine if every day you got off work, you didn't just like punch out the clock and you're getting in your car, at whatever, 5:30 p.m. and going home. No, you're stopping in a room, you know, adjacent to wherever you work, and then you sit in there and just people ask you questions about your job, about the day, about how your coworker, you know, what did you think of how your coworker's performance? What did you think of? Remember in the 3 o'clock hour when this happened? And then after they're done asking you these prodding questions, they go home and write reports on it and then publish it out there. I'd read that every day. It'd be really weird. To me, that's what's so weird about, like, you know, sports reporting is just imagine being in their shoes. Of course they're going to read. You know, some guys are better than others. You know, I covered Steven Adams. That guy doesn't read what's said about him. That's what's kind of unique about him. But I'd say 90% of guys are very aware of what's written about them.
I hope Anderson Varejao doesn't now.
Yeah, yeah. You know, some guys, I think vets get a lot. You know, rookies, it's really hard. I think a lot of times that's one of the main jobs of a guy like a David West is to tell him, hey, you know, don't read your clippings every day. It's going to be up. It's going to be down. Veterans like a Varejao, I'd hope over time kind of know the game so well and they kind of know not to, or like search their name on Twitter.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd hope so too. And it also, you get into the point, and I'm wondering how this was for the guys that came out of high school. I mean, we're pretty much past that now, but that change in media, because I didn't do writing in college or anything like that, but I can imagine that is at least a stepping stone. But you know, guys like LeBron that just went, I mean, he was written about more than maybe any high school guy in our lifetime, but the NBA is a totally different thing. And so you have to deal with that whole adjustment. And also, I'm sure the same is true for coaching. You know, like, I'm somebody who spends a fair portion of my time micromanaging and backseat quarterbacking all the stuff that Coach Kerr does, including getting angry in this fourth quarter. And that must be hard too.
Yeah, no, it's all interesting. What has always interested me about Durant, especially back in his earlier Thunder days, was, you know, most guys just search their name on Twitter, search for articles about them, read about themselves, and that's what they care about. He was always hypercritical of the media when we ripped Scott Brooks, Kendrick Perkins, Russell Westbrook's point guard abilities. He's always been very defensive of the teammates. He would get so angry about Perkins criticism. That was the one that always really ticked him off. And I think that's what's unique about him is he not only reads everything about himself, he reads a lot about his teammates and what's being written about his team.
And he's a very loyal guy, and it's going to be interesting to see if being a part of a team that just gets the level of attention that this team does will change any of those patterns, just because it's not possible to consume everything that's done on the Warriors.
Yeah, no, for sure. When they're 17-3, it's all good. And, you know, I think ever since that Thunder game, he's in a really good place, you know, because that was such a build up storyline. And it was almost kind of like, you know, I guess popping his head or whatever you want to call it. But there was such a release that night. I think media wise, because they've been winning and because that Thunder story for now, and I emphasize for now, has been thrown behind him. You know, he's in such a good place and he's playing like it. You know, he hasn't had a bad game, what, all season, really?
Not really. Maybe that the Lakers game, I guess, was one where he everyone struggled. But in that game, he was one of the only guys that did okay. So I guess that still counts.
I didn't think he played particularly well, but I mean, if you just look at his stat line, it was
fine. That's true. So to completely change topics.
Yeah, right.
What were you thinking when Zaza Pachulia tipped that ball and then was basically driving to the lane himself? Because I had exactly one thought.
Hammer it down, Zaza. You know, I was thinking, it was funny. You know, actually what my thought was, they opened up practice yesterday and there was this funny 5-on-5 game going on where all the stars had basically been given the day off, but all the backups were playing in this. It started as a 4-on-4 game where there was, I don't want to rattle them off, but I mean, there was no starters out there and Livingston and Iguodala weren't there. So basically the top seven were not even in view. I don't know where they were. The bottom eight on this roster were playing a 4-on-4 game, and they added two assistant coaches to go full court. And like David West was bringing the ball up the court at times. It was just funny to watch. Like Anderson Varejao closed the game with a game-winning three. It was one of the funnier pickup games I've seen. And within that game, Zaza Pachulia was super aggressive, and he had one drive to the lane where he tried like a Steve Nash or something like behind the back layup, like where he was driving and he tried to whistle it behind his back to the other side for like a lefty layup, and he botched it completely. And I was like, please attempt something like this, Zaza, as I saw him kind of rumbling up the court. Obviously, Mr. Lett, what was your thought?
My thought was if he doesn't dunk it, he's going to miss. And yeah. Like, it's just, that's one of those things that it's not like he has terrible touch. It's just that he's really snake bit in those types of moments. He did have one layup later in the game, but for whatever reason, those shots, and also he slowed down a little bit when, I can't remember which Sun it was, might have been Marquise Chris, kind of, he could see him in his rearview mirror, and it reminded me in a little bit of Iguodala. Iguodala slowed down a little bit because of J.R. Smith on that block, and it's like, oh, when he's out of rhythm now. And,
yeah.
But Zaza, he's such a fascinating player because he can do a lot out there, but I feel like there are certain moments where his mind is like, oh, I can do this, and then his body just sits there and goes, nah.
Yeah, well, the funny thing is, you mentioned him making a layup later in the game. It wasn't just some open layup. Like, he had this, like, acrobatic, I mean, you can't really call anything he does acrobatic, but it was, like, on a pick and roll, and Durant slipped him a little pass, and he got hit, like, right away on his jump, and he was, like, kind of spinning, twirling, and he threw it over his shoulder. Obviously, it was a lucky shot, but it dropped and won, and it was just funny that that's the one he hits, and the one he misses is that just wide open one.
Yeah, it happens that way sometimes, though, and I'm going to be very interested to see what he takes away from this season. Obviously, we have a long way to go, but, you know, he sacrificed something. There was a lot of money that was being spent summer that was being spent recklessly, and from the little stuff that's out there, it sounds like he could have gotten a decent chunk of that and made the decision to be on this Warriors team for this year, and I'm sure a portion of that will be on the title, but, you know, this is a very different experience from the stuff that he's done before. He's been a part of good teams, but this is something different.
Obviously, what he does the rest of the season, what he does in the playoffs is going to be important. But do you think to this point he has improved his market value? Because he's going to be right back on the free agent market when there's going to be a ton of money again. And, you know, do you think he's held? I mean, what would he have got last year? Maybe, you know, $8 million if he really tried to maximize his earnings per year?
Yeah, something about that. I mean, you think back to that Mozgov contract and you go, oh, well, you can see that. Geez. But it's, I think that that's about right. I think he's lowered it a little bit just because the pick and roll defense in particular has been something. I think now when teams are looking at him, they're thinking more in the backup realm. You know, maybe somebody would see him as a starter, but I don't think it's significant in that sense. The bigger question is just that now there are so many teams that have centers on big contracts that the supply is there. I mean, one of the storylines of the rest of the season is that there are going to be teams with centers that are burning a hole in their pockets. You know, that are, they're like, think about the Wizards. I mean, they have two good guys, but they have two good guys who can't play together and all that. And so I know the Warriors fans would love to see the outcome of that being that one of those players just decides, I'm going to take a massive buyout to go on the Warriors. And who knows, maybe that is going to happen, but it's just fascinating because you have, like, it's a very big decision. And, you know, not for him, it wasn't even taking a discount to stay where he was or anything like that. He took a discount to move partway across the country to play for a team that he'd never played for.
Ring chasing.
Yeah. And ring chasing in a different way than David West. You know, like, David West already did that once. I mean, he sacrificed more money than Pachulia to do what he did and decided it was a good experience. I mean, I remember I asked him about that on Media Day, and he basically said, you know, that he, I asked him what the experience last year taught him, and he's like, well, you know, it was kind of like it taught me that I wanted to do it again. And that's great. I mean, the most important part, and I think Durant is another really good example of how this can work, is you don't get many bites at that apple. So you might as well prioritize whatever the heck you want to prioritize and don't apologize for it. And I think Pachulia did that. I think David West did that. And I think Durant did that.
Yeah. There's that, obviously, like, this certain faction of fans that are just, they're dying for JaVale McGee to start. That's not going to happen.
At least not anytime soon.
Without an injury, no, it's not going to happen. How about JaVale tonight, though? I mean, he actually had a decent game, 11 points, 4-6. He had two lobs from Draymond that I can remember. But he also had his first, no doubt, Shaq did a fool moment of the year. We've been waiting for it.
It was spectacular. It really was. And JaVale, like, he's a really interesting figure at this point in his career because he can do a lot of things right. And he, you know, he's shown on this team he stands out by running the floor with effort. And he's had some really nice moments. But then every once in a while you get one of those, you're like, oh yeah, that's right, it's JaVale. And trying to inbound the ball when your team just scored is certainly something that qualifies.
Yeah, I was going to say, I should explain what happened for anyone that didn't watch. I believe it was off a free throw. The Warriors make a free throw, you know, obviously after they make it, everyone's running down the court. JaVale instead gets the ball from under the hoop, and almost like he was like fighting off Alex Lynn for, I think it was Alex Lynn.
It was.
Yeah, like, hey, why are you trying to get the ball? When obviously Alex Lynn is doing what he should do, which is get the ball to take it out of bounds. JaVale takes it from Lynn and starts to take it out of bounds, pretty quickly realizes, oh yeah, we just made the free throw, and kind of runs down the court. You could tell just because, look, he's the guy that he doesn't really embrace the Shaq and the Fool narrative around him. He's pretty loudly said it's kind of affected his career and made him this goofy label that he doesn't like. So I think right away he's like, oh God, I hope nobody noticed. But as he's running down the court, the crowd that's really gotten behind him this year, obviously they love when he comes in. They want more minutes from him. Like the Warriors kind of loves these Shaq to the full moment. So they're kind of start cheering and he, you know, he acknowledges it, puts his hand to the ceiling. The bench starts laughing. And did you see the video JaVale posted post-game?
Yes.
Like immediately after the game, Durant and Draymond and some of the guys in the locker room are bringing up the video, watching it and making fun of him. But at least I think he's finally in a place where there's so much embracing of his goofiness. Obviously, they're winning, which makes it so much easier to do that. But I think that's good for him.
It is. And he brings kind of a different energy to the team in almost universally a positive way. And you see that also the guy who was involved heavily in that video is Draymond. Draymond perks up whenever JaVale McGee's in the game, partially because he's somebody he can actually lob the ball to, which is exciting for Draymond. And that is nice as a change of pace guy. You know, like I think JaVale could be the player of the non like core four guys I would include Iguodala in that, whose role might change the least when we get into the playoffs, because they can just use him. Maybe it'll be a less reliable spot, but he's just like, if they need a little bit of juice, just throw JaVale in there for like 2-3 minutes and see if it works.
Yeah, I mean, he has this singular skill that is just, it meshes with exactly what the Warriors need. Plenty of people have talked about it, but the Warriors have just great passers all over the roster, but not a big besides JaVale that can go up and get the lob. So if they have these legendary floor spacers, like nobody has ever spaced the floor like a Curry-Thompson backcourt, plus Durant, especially when you plop him in the corner, it opens the floor up just incredibly. And then you got Draymond flying down the lane. Defenses have to make all these decisions, and the decision is 4 all-stars on the court, 2 surefire first ballot Hall of Famers. You're going to let the goofy guy kind of roam by himself. And you know what? It's his one skill. He's got – I was looking at the numbers the other day. He connected on 138 lobs in 2 years in Denver. Like, he's always been really good at this, and it just matches. It matches with this team. And that's why Kerr always tries to get him, I think, with the starters that – with the floor spacing. He doesn't really play him in a second unit type role.
And it makes sense also because the underrated part of why the Warriors are this historically great offense and probably will stay that way for the rest of the season is because all of those players, the big four that you mentioned, are all great passers. Like, the floor spacing is wonderful. Well, Clay's not a great passer. Clay is a periodically willing passer, but yeah, he's good enough. And Draymond's great, Curry's great, Durant's underappreciated and great. And so what that does is it creates situations that the Warriors can know how to make the right decision out of it and are willing to do that, because there are teams in the league that have good floor spacers who don't have an offensive capability like the Warriors do because they don't pass it as willingly. And the reason they're special is because they legitimately don't necessarily care who gets the shot as long as the shot is good and goes in. And
yeah.
That's really a part of the offensive ideal that gets underappreciated. I mean, I think about LeBron a lot, partially because we're almost the same age, but I feel like it's finally time, like these last couple of years, where people are realizing what makes him special beyond being 6'9" and the fastest guy in the league and built like a tank is that he's also the best passer of his generation.
Yeah, no, it's unbelievable. And it leads to incredible efficiency like we saw tonight. It's crazy the standard they've set for themselves that, look, they had 37 assists tonight, and we're talking about it being a sleepy game. We're really not even talking that much directly about the game because it kind of, in a lot of ways, was one of their more boring games of the season.
They had 34 free throws tonight.
Yeah.
Like, that's crazy. granted, a lot of that is Marquise Chris being Marquise Chris and amazing, but still, I mean, this team, and they're a great free throw shooting team. They only made 76% of them tonight, but some of that was just who got to the line and things like that. You know, JaVale missed a couple. Pachulia actually missed a couple, which was a little bit surprising. But they're a team that can beat you with their best lineups out there, that can beat you in so many ways, and yet we're also not seeing them anywhere close to their defensive ceiling because there's no reason to exert that way for more than a couple minutes now.
Especially not in a game against Phoenix.
No.
I mean, if they play Phoenix in Oracle 20 more times, they're probably scoring 130 points. 17 of those times.
Was 29 the low amount they scored in a quarter so far this year against the Suns at Oracle?
At Oracle, you know, I tweeted it earlier. I think they might have had a 27-point quarter, but they also had like a 40-point quarter in that first game. But, yeah. I mean, 133, 138 is their two-point totals. And it didn't feel like they played extremely well. I mean, they had 17 turnovers tonight, which kind of continues. Obviously, like, that is just their one offensive Achilles heel where they're always going to have the turnovers, but they're really at their best when they can keep that down to like 12 or 13.
Well, I mean, Curry had one of the quietest 30-point games of his career.
Yeah, 20 in the third quarter.
Yeah, I mean, he had some really incredible moments in this, and he was hitting shots. And also, for Curry, the trademark is him scoring them in a big sequence, you know, like Fitz calls it the Curry Flurry, but whatever you want to call it. And he didn't really do that in this game, at least off from when I was watching it live. Like, I never said, oh, Steph's heating up. It was just, oh, Steph is scoring a lot. It was a different type of game. And maybe that's because it was disjointed. I actually thought Eric Bledsoe overall did a decent job on him. He had some bad moments, just like anybody else does. And this was a game more so than some of the other ones where they maximized a lot of their opportunities. And that's kind of what's been so, if you want, I guess, scary about them, is that they have missed so many open shots. But in this game, those almost universally fell.
Yeah, I think the highlight sequence of the game was probably when Bledsoe had that fast break. And Bledsoe's like so good at using his body to kind of shield himself, and he jumped into Durant to kind of, like, you know, get him away, but Durant, just still so long, blocked his shot right into the ground, got it up, fast break, Curry hits a three, Suns call timeout. It was in a different way, but it was kind of similar to the highlight play the last time the Suns were here, where Durant had the chase down block and it led to the Curry three. So there's just so many moments like that. And, you know, just three of Steph's 20 in the third quarter. What is up with him in the third quarters? I think it's now he's at 208 points in third quarters this season, which is obviously his biggest quarter, and it's second in the league behind DeRozan, who I guess has monster third quarters.
I don't know for sure, but my best guess is that teams focus so much on him early that he you know, Curry, as much as they have other, you know, first ballot Hall of Famers on the team, he is that guy that teams game plan for. And then at a certain point, especially if Durant goes off, which I've noticed this more, Durant going off late first, early second when he plays largely with the backup units, I think coaches sit there and go, oh crap, we have to deal with him too and everything else. And so maybe at that point they let him do more one-on-ones. They don't do as much, not really trapping, but just as much specific defensive attention. And whenever you let off Stephen Curry, if he gets the looks he wants, he's just going to go. And that's what happened in this game.
All right. I got a quick question.
Sure.
So Steph Curry is at, right now, 49.6% field goal percentage, 42.4% from three, 92.6% from the free throw line. Kevin Durant is at 56.2% overall field goal, which is unbelievable. 42.9% from three, 87.1% on free throws. If you had to guess, who is more likely to have 50, 40, 90, and what's the percentage chance you'd give him to have two teammates, two high-volume shooters on the same team, both go for 50, 40, 90 in the same season?
Durant, I think Durant has the better chance just because he is a better free throw shooter than he has been so far. I actually notice it sometimes that he's been doing that more often. And for him, getting to 50% from the field is nothing. Like, that's something that I think
that's
not
a guarantee.
That's not going to be an issue for him. And that, for a lot of guys, is the hardest one. You know, if you're not DeAndre or something like that. So I'll say he's more likely, but I think they're both going to do it. I'd say it's about a 50-50 proposition that they both do it.
I think Durant's going to shoot better on his free throws. Like, he's at 87 now. I bet he ends in the 88s, but I don't think he's going to do it. just because I don't think he'll hit 90 on free throws.
He's going to get so pissed if he's like two free throws away from it.
Yeah, I mean, yes, because he's very knowledgeable on that. They both have done it in the past, so it's obviously they both can. That really would be incredible, though, to have two 50, 40, 90 guys on the same team.
Well, and they're 50, 40, 90 in a different way. Like, they're 50, 40, 90 high-volume guys.
Yeah,
exactly. I feel like that's something that gets lost in the shuffle sometimes when people talk about efficiency. Is like, efficiency and volume is what makes somebody special. And, like, there's this idea, I think it's Evan Zemira who came up with it, of, like, the scoring index is basically, like, that there's this trade-off between the two. And there are a few guys in NBA history that have ever basically defied that trade-off. And Stephen Curry, Kevin Durant are two of the biggest ever.
Yeah. No, I mean, there was a funny moment, I thought, post-game when I think Roz asked Draymond about Durant's efficiency, and Draymond said he's so obsessed with it at times that he'll be sitting on the bench and he'll start yelling at opponents and Durant even admitted, I guess tonight he yelled at Devin Booker after maybe like a poor fadeaway, that, hey, that's a bad shot. And it's just, he just thinks about it almost too much, to where I think that, a lot of his Warriors teammates have mentioned it this season that they'd like him to take more shots, but I just think he's always in his mind like, no, and that 19 footer with a guy, maybe, coming to another defender coming over, that's just not an efficient enough shot. So he only takes 7 shots tonight.
Yeah. He passed off at least one wide open three in this game. I think that's also still a little bit of the overpassing, don't want to be, what, you're still the new kid in school type of thing. But it seems like he's very comfortable doing that as long as he gets enough.
Yeah. No. It's interesting. Anything else on this game stick out to you?
Yeah. I feel like I have to take at least a minute to talk about how Steve Kerr doesn't have enough faith in his bench to give them a run with a 20-point lead. And, it hasn't had that, that horrifying negative moment yet of somebody getting hurt. Durant did bang his knees in that Bucks game, but that Bucks game was still close. And it all stems back to,
I thought the Nuggets game was the scary one when he had that 20-point streak on the line. He actually drove, and if the ref calls a block, he probably gets 20. But it was it was called a charge, and it was a scary little collision, and Kerr got him out right after that. But you can go back to your point, because I know you feel really strongly about that. But that's one that should have scared Kerr enough to try to get his main guys out as quick as possible.
Yeah, I understand that there is this desire that you never want to have to put those guys back in, that once they're out, they're out. And that is a legitimate feeling. However, there should be a lineup without your 4 best players, ideally without Iguodala as well, that will not hemorrhage a 24-point lead against a bad team. It's not that heavy a burden, especially when you consider that there's a 24-second shot clock and you can get some offensive rebounds. If you just, I'm not saying take the air out of the ball every single time. What I'm saying is if you shoot it early, it better be a layup or a dunk, because that's the only reason to do it. And the Warriors have never, and I was thinking back, I was watching my UCLA Bruins also not make this mistake also earlier in their game, of just knowing how to play with that kind of a lead, and just, understanding that it's okay to win by 8. You just don't, you don't want to lose, and you don't want to have the starters come back in. And so if I were doing this, because it's a risk mitigation thing. You just don't want, as you and I both know, and as all the fans know, like, being on the floor in an NBA game, there's just a risk. Like, you can fall into the cameras. You can hit one of your own guy's ankles. I mean, like, look at the play Draymond popped Ian Clark.
The Ian Clark one.
Yeah, like, that's just weird stuff happens in an NBA game. These guys are professionals. They're trying hard. And if they're not going to try hard, then you shouldn't have them in the game. If they're trying to avoid injury, if that's their number one priority at that point, they should not be in the game, and you let other people go in who have other things. And so one of the goals that I would have if the coaching staff asked my opinion is develop a 5-man lineup that does not include any of those players and teach them a philosophy of how to handle garbage time. And basically say, you never want to shoot, like, you can still push in transition and do all that, and if you get a bucket, that's awesome. If you get a wide open dunk, if you get a wide open three, good with it. Unless it's like JaVale shooting the three. And then you push it, you do what you want, you have some fun with it, try hard on defense, and then, you run with that. And that, I'm pretty confident that if you gave that group, let's say McCaw, Clark, Livingston, whatever power forward feels like playing, like Looney and JaVale, like, that group is not going to let the league get down below 10. I just don't think they're going to do it. And, you know, maybe one out of every 15 times they do, then if you need feel like you need to put in the starters, then you can do it. But it's a risk thing. You know, it would be the saddest way for this season to be affected for a player to get hurt in a time when they did not need to be in. Like, there are a lot of sad things that happen in basketball, but that's the most preventable.
Yeah. Couple quick things on it. You mentioned, you know, if they potentially gave up a lead. Well, this is the whole thing with this team this year. Who cares, right? Let's say they, you know, that lineup comes in, they're up 16 with 8 minutes left, and they just take the starters out and go all bench, and then that bench unit gives up a, you know, a quick 10-2 run, and suddenly it's 8 points with 4 minutes left or something like that. Just, you know what? Why not, if you're Kerr, in like a game, like let's say it happened tonight, just go with it. If they lost, it doesn't, like they've talked about how much they don't care. That'll be maybe a good moment for the bench unit to try to close out a lead late. So that those one out of every 15, one out of every 20 disasters you're talking about, that wouldn't be a disaster in the season. They're not chasing a wins record. A loss in a lot of ways sometimes I think is good for Steve Kerr.
Losing on the first game of the season was a great thing for this team.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, getting their butts kicked by the Spurs wasn't great, but just not having that pressure, I think it was a big help.
Yeah, I'm not saying you don't want to lose, but I'm just saying even the disaster scenario that we're talking about, that you throw these bench guys in and they give up this massive lead and it's such a disaster, that isn't a disaster for this team because losing in the regular season has become, you know, a whatever thing for them. And then the other thing is they're playing four, you know, like tonight, they should have got them out early because they're about to play 4 and 5 nights, 5 and 7 on the road against good teams. Clippers, Jazz come up next Wednesday, Thursday, then Grizzlies, Timberwolves, you know, for the 3-4 of that 4 and 5 nights. So get, you know, compile as much rest as possible for guys like Iguodala and everyone else.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. You good on this?
Yeah.
On this crossover edition of, you know, the Warriors All 82 / Locked On Warriors podcast?
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun. I mean, we found a way to have more than enough to talk about.
Yeah, I know, you know, sometimes, especially with this game, we're probably the only two up this late still talking about this somewhat sleepy but huge offensive night for the Warriors.
Absolutely. Thanks again to Anthony Slater for taking the time to come on. You can and should read him at the San Jose Mercury News and Bay Area News Group. And you can also follow him on Twitter at Anthony V. Slater. That's AnthonyVSlater. As I said at the outset, the current plan, unless something comes up, which of course it always can, this will probably be the Monday episode. Normally things that come out on Sundays don't get a ton of traction, so I'm going to use this as Sunday and Monday. Also, we talked about a lot of different stuff, so it'll be that. Then there will be a fresh new episode after Warriors Pacers. Don't know yet whether I will have a guest or do it solo. It'll just depend on timing and everything like that. But thank you so much to everybody for listening. It continues to be an absolute pleasure to do this. And yeah, so if you have any feedback, good, bad, and different, you can reach out to me, Danny LaRue, NBA @gmail.com, @DannyLaRue on Twitter, LeRoux. And yeah, I read everything, respond to what I can. I've gotten some good ideas. There are a few things I'm going to incorporate. And the tentative plan is to do a podcast. I'm not going to say the subject matter, but it is one of the things I get asked about the most about for Locked On Warriors. I'm thinking, I started working on a piece on it for The Athletic. If I get it done by later in the week, it will become a podcast on one of the off days. I'm still working to see it through, and it'll be a little bit early for it, but just to give people a little inkling of where we could be going. So we'll see on that, just a little bit of a tease for it, and maybe that'll be midweek. It might end up being the week later, just depending on how this all works out. If you are a football fan, you should definitely check out Locked On Niners, Locked On Raiders, or whatever other team you're a fan of. The Bay Area has plenty of transplants, and the Locked On Podcast Network is doing great work everywhere else. If you want to support the show, you can do so. Subscribe, download every episode, leave a rating, leave a review, tell your friends, tell people on the internet, whatever makes you happy. And also you can check out our sponsors, SeatGeek, using the promo code LOWarriors, and MacWeldon.com. Using the promo code LOW. That really does help because it tells you it's coming from us. So thank you so much for listening. Take care and make it a great day.